The second half of a poem called The Dialogue of Self and Soul.
It's a serious question. Do you want to be born again? You willing to go through all this again?
A living man is blind and drinks his drop. What matter if the ditches are impure? What matter if I live it all once more? Endure the toil of growing up, the ignominy of boyhood, the distress of boyhood changing into man, the unfinished man and his pain brought face to face with his own clumsiness. The finished man amongst his enemies, how in the name of heaven can he escape that defiling and disfigured shape? The mirror of malicious eyes casts itself against his eyes until at last he thinks that that shape must be his shape. What's the good of an escape if Anna find him in the wintry blast? I am content to live it all again, and yet again, if it be life to pitch into the frog spawn of a blind man's ditch, a blind man battering blind men, or into that most fecund ditch of all, the folly that a man does or must suffer if he woos a proud woman, not kindred of his soul. I am content to follow to its source every event, in action or in thought, measure the lot, forgive myself the lot. When such as I cast out remorse, so great a sweetness flows into the breast that we must laugh and we must sing. We are blessed by everything. Everything we look upon is blessed.
Do the last four lines again. You want you
such as I?
Yeah, the lizard of remorse. Go
the
on,
lizard
give it to
of
us.
Remorse. When such as I cast out remorse, so great a sweetness fills the breast that we must laugh and we must sing. For we are blessed by everything, and everything we look upon is blessed.
Robert Bly and Michael Mead, two very wise men, both with a wealth of life experience and the hardships that came with it. That saying, the lizard of remorse. I never understood that verse. It spoke to me on an intuitive level, but I never fully understood the meaning. This happens a lot in the manosphere. Words are thrown around, but do we really understand the true definitions of those words? The deeper meanings? And what it really means to live by those values, those virtues. Men speak about morals and ethics, but it's often just used as a mantra in an attempt to appear profound. Do we really practice what we preach? Have we even looked into the true definitions of those words and the deeper meanings? In truth, we all fail. We all feel regret and remorse. Without first addressing those shortfalls, those character flaws we all possess, we can forget any ideas about ascending to higher planes of morals or virtue. Accepting that we have little or no power or influence over external things can help us become more reactive, more resilient, and less likely to self-destruct when things aren't going our way. How we choose to react in certain situations can be a blessing or a curse. We look for knowledge and wisdom everywhere, but it's ultimately life itself that teaches us the most valuable lessons, the most about who we are and what we're really made of. We're invited to mentor ourselves in good times and bad. If we don't rise to the challenge of facing life head on, we can become withdrawn. We look for distractions or ways to avoid dealing with life's problems. Granted, some of these problems are extremely painful and require a great deal of soul searching. But they're very real and they're not going away until they've been resolved. The self-harming behaviors we see in the manosphere are often symptoms of unresolved, underlying traumas or feelings of low self-worth. Men are seriously punishing themselves, either through active or passive means. Now I see men like One Fast Dak serving up tough love to his brothers because he loves those men. He genuinely cares about the friends he's made online. There's much talk about toxic masculinity, but very few people wish to acknowledge the positive manifestation of testosterone when one man shows true love and compassion for his brothers. This kind of tough love among men sends out a clear message. It's time to stop self-injuring, time to stop paying penance, and time to face those demons. Regret and remorse are two of those insidious demons men carry through life. Until we face those enemies down, until we stop the self-harming, until we let go of that bitterness and resentment towards women, until we let go of that poor me victim mindset, we don't stand a chance of making any kind of meaningful or significant change in our lives. It's hard. They will keep opening up old wounds and rubbing our faces in it, but we have to learn to take it on the chin and rise from the ashes every single time. It begins with honest self-reflection. By its Latin definition, remorse means to bite, or more accurately, to gnaw over and over. Remorse can last a lifetime, whereas mere regrets can be fleeting. Often regret can be seen in a man's eyes on his deathbed when he realizes he squandered his chances and let life pass him by. Criminals are asked to show remorse for their crimes before parole boards, to show they're truly sorry for the things they've done, to show they've been rehabilitated, restored or reformed into a better version of themselves. If you haven't reflected on the past, the things you've done, and the things that have been done to you, how can you ever understand the way you feel or the man you've become? How did you arrive at this place? You can drown those sorrows for a while or complain online forever, but at some point, we have to sit down with those uncomfortable visitors and reflect on the hand we've been dealt. It's all too easy to sit around all day pointing fingers at everything that's wrong with the world, telling everyone the sky is falling. But if you stay in that place, you're going nowhere fast. And if you encourage other men to stay in that place with you, you're doing those men a grave disservice. You're not helping them. You're holding them back because you yourself are not ready to move on, to take it to the next level. You're stuck in a powerless place of self-pity, desperately trying to convince yourself and others that you've got this thing all figured out. And we've all been there. Often men come to the manosphere in rough shape. I was one of them. We work on ourselves continually in a harsh and often hostile environment, both online and in real life. Men posture, compare wounds, sometimes even gaslighting other men in an attempt to discredit them or somehow minimize their suffering and experiences. It's like a competition to see who can be the biggest victim, who hurts the most, who's got the most scars. In truth, we all suffer sometimes. The manosphere is a great place, despite its flaws. It can help, or it can hinder a man. Men wander in and out of this community. Sometimes we find help and support. Sometimes we're better off working on ourselves alone. Ask yourself, what would you do if there were no one around to sympathize with you? Would you make a faster recovery? It can go both ways. Are some men keeping you in a toxic mindset, keeping you here and holding you back when you could be focusing on more positive things? Now ask yourself why they might be doing that. Maybe they're motivated by subscriber counts or donations. Maybe they're scared to go it alone, and despite all their talk and bravado, they will never forge a more meaningful life for themselves. A man will never go his own way with that attitude. Or maybe it's you who wants to stick around and further expose yourself to that kind of content. Maybe we just need a reminder from time to time. A dose of red pills. Every man is different, I suppose. Some of the disputes I see online are often more productive than we realise. More valuable than the backslapping and hero worship. The posturing is all part of it. Men spitting in each other's faces in a desperate attempt to be heard, to be seen, to have their experiences validated. It's all part of the process. Sometimes it's futile, other times necessary.
You never fought that war. You weren't even there, man.
What the fuck do you mean I wasn't there, man? What do you mean?
Come on, hero, come clean.
Why should I?
What the fuck are you hiding?
I'm not hiding nothing. You're the one that's hiding down here in Mexico. You're the one that's hiding. What are you hiding from, you whiny fuck?
Don't shit me. You never killed a baby, anybody, anything, did you, COVID? Did you?
Did you?
Did you?
Did you?
You ever look at yourself in the fucking mirror?
Did you?
Fuck you.
You?
No. You! Fuck you!
No. Fuck you!
Manosphere men are testing and sharpening each other with tough love. Just as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Men challenge and posture to gain respect or acceptance. We're made to work for it. Unfortunately, the Trojan horses often slip through the net due to manipulation and weaknesses in male nature. Thirsty men sneak in under the guise of being red-pilled, only to reveal their true intentions, pushing dating and relationship advice, jonesing around men who are recovering from the devastating effects of divorce or parental alienation. Men like Hugh Mann, with his limited life experience, welcomed in with open arms and promoted so he can preach from the plantation. Surely I'm not the only man to see through this. I've got absolutely no problem calling these men out. None whatsoever. What men see and hear online can have some very serious real-world implications. These snake oil salesmen giving terrible advice to younger men, they taint the philosophy. They drag it back to the plantation. Their red pills are brown because they're full of shit. These men don't belong in this community. Yet they make sure they use it to soften the dialogue and make it all about their desperate need for female companionship. Their advice is reckless and dangerous. Back in the day, men like Razorblade Candy would call these people out. The controlled opposition poisoning the MGTOW well. And some say RBK was a purist, and that may be true. But look at the state of the manosphere now. I don't want to bash anyone. The last thing young men of today need is another dating coach masquerading as a red pill mentor. These men come around. They claim to be awakened. They claim to have had their satori. Yet they offer nothing of real value to other men. They use the community. Then they get a girlfriend and sneak out the side door. These grifters come in parroting a few of our talking points. And then slowly but surely, you'll see them becoming more mainstream and female-friendly, to the point that men are drowned out and cast aside in favour of issues that directly benefit women and the men who pander to them. What are these so-called mentors going to say to the younger men who set boundaries that were never respected? The young men who invest their time, energy, and money in relationships that ultimately fail because statistically, the odds are stacked against them. What are men like Hugh Mann gonna say to a younger man when he's lost everything and he's living in his car because he wanted to get his needs met? We've already got enough broken homes. There's too many single mothers sponging off the state and fatherless communities without these alpha male dating gurus bleating on about setting boundaries. As if setting boundaries ever stopped a woman from destroying her own family. It's as if everything that's been said over the years, and the very reason this community came to be, has been completely overlooked or dismissed by some of these men. It's a female tactic. These grifters use the manosphere to build channels and promote themselves as a brand. When they've got what they want, they either disappear or go all out blue pill, exposing their true nature and intentions. How does that benefit any man other than themselves? Without well-grounded mentors or father figures, this generation of boys will suffer the same fate as the rest of us. They need a new direction, not some played out, repackaged alpha male bullshit. Most boys don't have father figures. They have single mothers. But those mothers can't raise boys without a man around. The boys are raising themselves and each other. It's like the Lord of the Flies out there. Without dads around, many of these boys will have to be father to themselves. We owe it to them to share wisdom and offer sound advice, or these young men will suffer the same fate as many of us. Knife crime in the UK has been on a steady incline for years. The police have only just cottoned on to the fact that it's linked to fatherlessness. But who are they blaming? They're blaming the handful of deadbeat dads out there and tarring the good fathers with the same brush. Nobody thinks to tackle the root cause of fatherlessness. That being single mothers sleeping around with deadbeats and using coercive control to prevent children from seeing their dads and extended family members. Eve gave in to temptation again, and now we're all paying for it. The police aren't interested in enforcing criminal offences when it's a single mother perpetrating the abuse. We know this. We've known it for years. We're just the ones out here picking up the pieces and watching the fallout, whilst trying to wake everyone up to the truth about gynocentrism and misandry. Without a father figure around, some of these young lads playing Lord of the Flies are on a one-way trip to prison or the grave. Recently, my local social services saw fit to house a paranoid schizophrenic lad opposite me. Now, I've got no problem with mental illness or mentally ill people. I realise the majority of them are extremely vulnerable and are likely to have been abused or suffered childhood trauma. Indeed, we all are likely to suffer from some kind of mental illness or the diagnosable symptoms of one or more as we go through life. Unfortunately, this young lad also had a history of violence and a drug habit, which meant he brought around all manner of undesirables at all times of the day and night. Add to that the fact that he also drank alcohol, which prevented his antipsychotic meds from working, and we had a powder keg situation just waiting to go off. What this lad needed was a father figure, but it was left too long. He wanted to challenge every man he came across. He needed to be shown that older men were worthy of his respect. Despite me having several conversations with him about the consequences of his decisions and actions, his antisocial nature, mixed with substance abuse, always got the better of him. after attempting to break into several houses and apartments in the street, including mine, twice, he was subsequently issued with an eviction notice. As you can imagine, the atmosphere was hostile, to say the least. So 2 days before he was due to be evicted, he finally blew up. And just after midnight, he smashed his flat up, punched out windows, cut himself, and intentionally sprayed arterial blood all around the public areas. He essentially weaponized his blood, a dirty protest, in an attempt to infect or disturb others. By this time, the police had been called, and after hearing him kick my door several times and threaten to rape my daughter, I'd already unsheathed the hunting knife kept above the front door. Now, I don't want to kill anyone. I don't want to go back to prison either. But I was forced to make the uncomfortable decision that if he breached that door, I would have to stop him. He'd already smashed the security cameras and smeared blood over the spy hole, so there was no way of telling if he was armed or not. Social services had failed him, and they also failed the local residents. They were well aware of the fact that his flat had been taken over by a local dealer and was being used as a crack house. He was a danger to himself and everyone around him, and he almost kicked the wrong front door in that night because I'd made the decision to stab him as many times as it would take to stop him. Now that sounds graphic, but it went past the point of man-made laws. It became a kill or potentially be killed situation. I felt for this lad. He was clearly suffering, and he was being manipulated and used by people around him. I would rather help him than hurt him, but the situation had been allowed to go too far. Several of my friends remarked that they would have opened the door and killed him. Killed him to protect their wives or their children in some display of sacrificial male rage. This is bravado. None of the men who said that have ever seen the inside of a prison cell, or had to pick up the pieces after serving a sentence. Their perception of a win in a fight could ultimately turn out to be a monumental defeat. I also wonder how these men would cope with manslaughter on their conscience, and the repercussions from the family members of the man they claim they would have killed so readily. I saw enough men in prison receiving letters from wives and girlfriends who'd moved on and found someone else because they could no longer wait. You think a woman would kill or die for you? Why am I telling you this? Well, even the coldest killers have remorse. They might not admit to it, but they have to live with what they've done for the rest of their lives. Even if they don't regret the act, they regret the effect it had on themselves and the people closest to them. They regret it when they go to the electric chair or the gallows. Richard Kuklinski, or the Iceman as he was known, would be a good example. A mafia hitman who showed virtually no remorse until he had to face what he'd done to his own family. Soldiers with PTSD are forever haunted by the sights, sounds, and even the smell of killing and war. Where do you think those nightmares come from, if it's not from deep feelings of regret or remorse? If men aren't secretly ashamed of some of the things they've done?
I'm having trouble finishing the poem.
Can you suggest a last line?
I'm not a writer.
Yet. You have written many pages since you came here.
What else has she told you?
You have nightmares?
Every soldier has nightmares.
Only one who is ashamed of what he has done.
You have no idea what I have done.
あれを持て。 You have seen many things.
I have.
You do not fear death, but sometimes you wish for it. Is this not so?
Yes.
I also. It happens to men who have seen what we have seen. And then, I come to this place so my ancestors I never remember like these blossoms. We are all dying. To know life in every breath, every cup of tea, every life we take, the way of the warrior.
Life in every breath.
That is Bushido.
Aye.
These young men today, these damaged young men and boys, are dangerous. They're hard to deal with. It takes more time and energy to straighten some of these boys out than you or I can spare. The system is failing them. Families are failing them. The lack of resources for boys and men is contributing to all of this. It's a systemic problem. If boys and men aren't hurting others, they're hurting themselves. It seems to be a continual cycle of hurt or be hurt. If it's not us hurting ourselves, it's other people stabbing us in the back or betraying our trust. So what's the answer? A realistic solution. We have to accept it and deal with it. We heal, then we're broken again. Two steps forwards, one step back. It's a constant fight to maintain sanity and equilibrium. We have to develop our own methods of de-stressing and rationalizing everything that happens so we can continue to function. If you're a single father, you will be continually separated from your children until they become adults. That's if you haven't already lost them. Once they become adults, you may be estranged from your children after many years of parental alienation and coercive control by the mother. You'll feel that sense of grief and loss amplified. You will likely lose your self-worth. You'll become depressed. You will neglect your own health and well-being. And you might wish to kill yourself or someone else. The emotional residue you'll be carrying around with you may cause you to overreact or lash out in everyday interactions. You'll become a loaded gun, just waiting to go off. There are limited resources out there for men. They can be a part of the solution, but be fully prepared to spend hours on hold, or find there's nobody available on weekends because there's no funding for men's helplines. When you do get through, you'll likely speak to a well-meaning female who has absolutely no idea what you're going through as a man. Unfortunately, that's all that's available for men at the present time. They're doing their best with limited resources, but it's nowhere near adequate. They may even unintentionally gaslight you, so be careful if you turn to any helplines for men. Men need to be around men, especially the younger men and boys. They need male influence from many decent men. They need to grow up around men and learn how to be a man from men. They need to learn right from wrong by observing both good and bad attributes of male behavior, forming a positive male identity by being around older men with integrity and life skills to share. What we have here in this community is a precious resource. Many men who can validate your experiences and offer sound advice from their own personal lives without judging you. They have sympathy, and more importantly, they have empathy. Even when we spit in each other's faces, it can work. Sometimes those hard truths are the ones we needed to hear the most. But there's no harm in two men squaring up and settling their differences that way. The gypsies swear by it. They have a straightener. They go toe to toe with bare knuckles. They shake hands and they settle their disputes that way. Doesn't always resolve everything, but it gets most of that rage and frustration out in a controlled environment, overseen by elders from either family. Respect is won and lost in a kind of righteous karma. Unfortunately, nowadays we have this phenomenon where everything that men build for themselves is overrun by women. We build it, they come around and shit all over the place. Weak men allow this to happen when they give in to women's whining, damseling, or just plain old manipulation, appealing to their inner simp. Just look at gyms now. Women in Lycra filming themselves while men are trying to focus on their workouts. What's all that about? We need men-only spaces for men to communicate openly with other men, without women changing the dynamics and making it all about them. So if you're bringing women into our conversations, you've come to the wrong place. This is a male community, a place where men help other men. If you don't understand that, leave. You're part of the problem. Go join our friend Hugh Man chasing unicorns over there on the plantation. It doesn't matter how many subs they've got or bought, if they're full of shit, if they're a simp, or if they continually ask for money, they're not here to help anyone but themselves. Take back your community, build it up, add to the philosophy, go away and research, then return with newfound knowledge. Share your wisdom and life experiences, but don't sell out. Don't let your fellow men down. Don't sell this community out. Many more men will need this place. Once we've been tested and forged in the Manosphere Crucible, we need to reintegrate with the world. Internalization of information and reintegration with the world on our own terms is key. We should continue searching for the good in life, the simple things that can be found everywhere, not just in nature, but also in everyday interactions. Significant moments in time that shape our worldview and ultimately influence our destiny. Time is wasted on purple-pilled gurus or people pushing political or racial agendas. Since when was the Manosphere about polarizing or radicalizing men? The Manosphere was never supposed to be about holding on to a victim mentality. Self-actualization, human flourishing, and virtus, masculine excellence. These were meant to be the things we strive to achieve. Understanding our journey through life as men and how to navigate this territory using tenacity, fortitude, and perseverance. We are not the left. We don't need identity politics or intersectionality in order to participate in the Victim Olympics. No poor black slave mentality here. No poor downtrodden little white man. We stand alone as men and come together to share wisdom and build on this positive philosophy for men. All men. Subverting the community with that political shit serves no purpose. It comes from a position of weakness, and it tells me that you're vulnerable and frightened. Retreating into racial or nationalistic tribes or identities is collectivism, not individualism. That kind of talk created division in the Manosphere many years ago. Men felt alienated and turned away because they saw the racism creeping in. Those men needed help, not biased identity politics dressed up as MGTOW philosophy. The more you allow yourself to become focused on macro events, politics, and issues regarding race and nationality, the external, the further away you will be drawn from focusing on yourself. The Manosphere was always a place that encouraged men to be autonomous and self-reliant, not bound to a group identity, never deferring to another man, never acting in such a way that manipulates men into deferring to you. No leaders, no followers. Just sovereign men who've done the essential inner work and can ultimately stand alone and weather the storm when the shit hits the fan. If we're lucky, our close friends or families might help us out, but no man can count on that. The reality for us as men is we might have to rebuild our lives from nothing many times. Losing everything we've become attached to can be daunting, but it can also be a liberating experience, all part of life's rich tapestry. Indeed, those times when we're forced out of our comfort zones can lead to adventure. We meet people we would never have met, go places we would never have been. It's not all bad, even though it might seem like your world is falling apart at the time. Often, it's in these transitionary phases in life that we truly feel alive.
People say that what we're all seeking is a meaning for life. I don't think that's what we're really seeking. I think what we're seeking is an experience of being alive, so that the life experiences that we have on the purely physical plane will have resonances within that are those of our own innermost being and reality, and so that we actually feel the rapture of being alive.
The hero's journey isn't always about answering the call. Sometimes it's thrust upon us, and we have no choice but to go along for the ride. Think about it. Did you ask to be born? Or were you spat out into this world, naked and confused like the tarot fool? Vulnerable, innocent, and untainted by contact with society and all its pitfalls. And so began the hero's journey. Resiliency and wisdom are then accumulated over time. A subtle aspect of resiliency is resignation, accepting things as they are because we're often powerless to change them. We accept the things we cannot change or find the courage to change the things we can. We're free to change our attitude. That's free will. But sometimes things are greater than us, and we have to accept that. Accepting adversity is also free will. We choose our course of action. Sometimes it's instinctual, fight or flight. Sometimes we're powerless and we have to walk away. Resistance is often futile, so we lose a few battles to win the war. Some wars just aren't worth fighting. It's not about winning or losing, it's about not being defeated. Sometimes the enemy is within, so there's no point looking for an external enemy. We have to go to war with ourselves. We have to live with the decisions we make and the lasting consequences. Repentance isn't always about feeling regret or remorse for wrongdoings. It can also be about the remorse we feel for not doing the right thing, confessing to ourselves that we fucked up. We're not perfect. That's called being accountable. Until we make peace with the past, show remorse for the part we played in the outcome, and lay all those demons to rest, we will never move past this place. We'll never heal or find lasting peace. But if we're brave enough to acknowledge remorse and hold ourselves accountable for the things within our control, then, and only then, can we begin to rectify them. It takes an admission of guilt before we can reverse the effects on ourselves and others. When we finally repent, when we sanctify ourselves, we set ourselves free.
Sit down. Ellis Boyd Redding, if I'll say you've served 40 years of a life sentence, you feel you've been rehabilitated?
Rehabilitated? Well, now, let me see. You know, I don't have any idea what that means.
Well, it means you're ready to rejoin society.
I know what you think it means, Sonny. To me, it's just a made-up word. A politician's word, so that young fellas like yourself can wear a suit and a tie and have a job. What do you really want to know? Am I sorry for what I did?
Well, are you?
There's not a day goes by I don't feel regret. Not because I'm in here, because you think I should. I look back on the way I was then. A young, stupid kid who committed that terrible crime. I want to talk to him. I want to try to talk some sense to him. Tell him the way things are. But I can't. That kid's long gone, and this old man is all that's left. I gotta live with that. Rehabilitated. It's just a bullshit word. So you go on and stamp your form, Sonny, and stop wasting my time. Because to tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.